Rhiannon Giddens has traveled the world playing American music. Born in North Carolina, she has sung, played violin, and plucked banjo in her band, the Carolina Chocolate Drops. She has also worked as a solo artist, performing traditional folk, country, blues, and bluegrass, including original compositions. Both a Grammy winner and a recipient of the MacArthur Fellowship Genius Grant, Giddens is performing two sets at this weekend's Fresh Grass Festival at Massmoca in North Adams, Massachusetts. While her Saturday performance will be a more conventional set, Giddens tells WAMC her Friday set that opens the festival will be unique.
Era yo una chiquilla todavía.
This is a little unusual because I have a commission. So I have a new piece of music that I'm presenting. So I'm building the show kind of around that. And then I have another, I'm performing twice. So the second time I come, I will do, you know, sort of more of my normal show that I've been doing this year, or, you know, or around the record Freedom Highway, which, you know, which is my most recent record. I usually don't really tailor what I do, because one of the things about what I do is that it kind of has all the genres represented in there, so it kind of fits at every festival, you know, it's a folk or bluegrass or blues or, you know, rock or country, you know, I kind of just do what I do, and that seems to be working pretty well. This one definitely was a kind of slightly different case. It was pretty fun to figure that out.
Your music has taken you around the world. I'm interested in what it's like to practice all these different sorts of music in different environments, different communities.
I mean, it's really fun. I mean, you can be backstage at a festival in Tennessee and playing, like, hardcore bluegrass. You could be, you know, somewhere in the Netherlands and hearing some completely different kinds of music. You can be, I mean, it's just what is nice about kind of being global is that it really reminds you that people are making all sorts of kinds of music everywhere, and what you do is just one piece of that. But also, you know, you also realize how much love there is for American music, how much love there is for our indigenous art forms of old time and bluegrass and country and all of that. There's a lot of love for anything with a banjo and a fiddle, you know. So it's cool to kind of realize that too as you travel around, like how much love there is for those things.
As you travel overseas, are you often put in a position where you have to sort of contextualize or locate American music and the complex social narrative that this country represents?
I mean, I've definitely, you know, as part of the Carolina Chocolate Drops and the solo, especially given the fact that my work is, you know, deals with social justice and history, and I am African American, and so I definitely get, I sometimes, like, especially towards the beginning, we got asked that far more overseas than we ever got asked at home. You know, the you know, putting it in context and the complex, you know, history and all that stuff. I mean, a lot of times we got asked way more really complicated, interesting questions about it. Now that's changed. You know, I definitely get really great interviews here now, but I just thought that was really interesting that people in Europe were more willing to engage in that for a while than people here were, you know. But I think times are changing in that people are more willing to sort of, you know, talk about those kind of things, even in the context of what some people would say is harmless music. You know, it's not, but some people might say that, you know, as they look at it, so.
Americana and blues and folk in America have often carried this sort of very pointed political edge. As it sort of grows farther away from the mainstream American listening habits, how does it still maintain that significance and that edge, so to speak?
Well, I mean, we have to look at terminology, because Americana is a very recent category that's been made up, you know, to serve as a kind of a catch-all of people who are being pushed off of mainstream country radio, which is, like, I totally get that, and it's been a necessary thing. But you know, where political commentary is, you know, used to be in folk music. It is still in hip hop and rap in some places. It is now, you know, I'm hearing it, you know, from the what you would call Americana. I hear that more now, you know, than back in the day. You know, to be honest, I actually hear more of it. Coming from people who, you know, like I said, are not getting played on mainstream country radio but have huge followings, and, you know, like Jason Isbell and people who are actually, you know, trying to say things with their platform. You know, I don't know how. I don't know where it's going, and I don't know what exactly it means. But I do think people are starting to say more, not less. You know, the mainstream is. I mean, it's been gone from mainstream for a long time. I feel. You know, the whole political discourse is. You know, the '60s there was some stuff happening in the '70s, but then you know you hit that sort of '80s revolution. The mainstream stuff has been pretty. You know. Doesn't really touch on those topics unless I'm just missing it. Because to be honest, I don't listen to the radio much these days. But that's the impression that I've gotten. But I do see feel a whole lot of people like you know really saying things with their music, and you know that's really encouraging to me.
So you've been nominated for and awarded countless prizes over your career. You've you know received a MacArthur Fellowship. Looking back over your accomplishments, what mean the most to you, and what do you still want to achieve?
I tell you, like, I've gotten some, I mean, yeah, of course, they all mean a lot to me because it means that people are, you know, listening and they're, you know, saying, yes, good job, keep going with, you know, what you're doing. You know, but it's hard not to feel that burst of pride every time I see the blue ribbon that the Carolina Chocolate Drops won at the Mount Airy Fiddlers Convention when we won first place at the band competition. You know, sometimes those things that nobody else knows about are the things that mean the most, you know, to you because it's my, you know, it's in North Carolina. It's my community of old-time musicians. And, you know, so those are the things I don't forget, you know, in the midst of the sort of bigger, more heavy prizes, which I am very, very grateful for, you know, but that ribbon is right up there next to my Grammy, you know, like they, I feel like they're equal in my eyes, you know, because the work that we did is the Chocolate Drops and trying to, you know, say, hey, we're here alongside everybody else, you know, so those are the kind of moments, being the first lecturing man at the Grand Ole Opry, you know, and working on a ballet that we think is like the first Polish ballet that written for a black ballerina, you know, these are the things that are very exciting to me, alongside the, you know, sort of the honors like the MacArthur that, of course, I'm just, you know, I'm very grateful for.
Your most recent record, Freedom Highway, features a great number of originals and a few selections of classic covers. How did you go about selecting the covers for that record?
It was a real organic process. I mean, every record has its own sort of soul, its own energy that develops as you're making it. And the ones, I mean, Freedom Highway was one I knew I always wanted to do. I had first done it at a show with a good friend of mine, Bea Beeman, who's a wonderful singer-songwriter out of California, and he had. You know, brought it up saying, hey, we should do this, and we did it. It was just so much, you know, there's so much to it. So we definitely wanted to put that one on there. And the Angels Laid Him Away, it's just, you know, so many parallels to, you know, what mothers have been saying forever, but just like to the whole, there were so many people that were getting killed by the police and just seeing the mothers' faces and, you know, just thinking about that song, it just seemed like the thing, you know, it was the counterpoint to Better Get It Right the First Time. And what was the other cover? I can't remember. Wait a minute. My brain's dead.
No worries. It looks like there's Mississippi John Hurt cover on there, a Richard Farina.
Yeah, okay. The Angels Laid Him Away was the Mississippi John Hurt. And the Richard Farina, that was Birmingham Sunday, that just, you know, one of the reasons why we just wanted to highlight that one is because, you know, the names, there's very few songs or stories where you know the names of the people who were, you know, who were killed. And you know, I just think that it's a really personalizing story. It's like, you know, it's not just nameless people who get killed in these acts of violence. It's people, you know, it's people with futures and you know, hopes and dreams and, you know, and all of that sort of thing. So they just seem to fit right alongside the originals that were coming out.
As we get into the end of summer 2018, what are you listening to on your own? Like, what kind of music is informing your practice right now?
Oh, well, I've got some projects on the horizon dealing with some different things. So I tend to listen to music that involves that. So I'm listening to a lot of Oud music, So like Middle Eastern music and North African music. Then I don't listen to a lot of music just for fun. I actually really need silence because music isn't so much of my life that if I don't let my brain kind of go flat for a bit, you know, I never get enough space to actually start creating again. So it's really important to have silence, to be honest with you. But I had recently got back into They Might Be Giants because my kids really like They Might Be Giants. So I've been putting that on, which I was a big fan of theirs when I was younger. So, you know, the kids can affect things when it comes to what you're listening to in the house.
So what's your process like before shows, like a big stage outdoor show like Fresh Grass? How do you get in the zone where you can sort of create and share in an open way?
I drink my tea and make my set list and, you know, put my clothes on, and that's kind of it. You react. I like to react to things as they happen instead of trying to prepare too much, you know. I've done so many outdoor festivals, I kind of know how it goes. You know what I mean? There's a little instinctual thing that'll just kind of kick in. So you talk a little bit louder, you make things a little bit cleaner in terms of what you're saying, just because there's people outside, they can't always hear you. There's just little adjustments that you make, but in terms of the music, it's always the same. You know, it's always just what we're making for the day. And, the audience response will then shape how it goes, you know.
As an artist, what's it like to raise children with music? Like, how are you sort of curating their childhood exposure to music that you love and also maybe open up avenues for them to discover their own passions?
Well, it's really important to expose them to different kinds of music. That's what I was exposed to as a child, and I think it has a lot to do with, you know, where I am now. My mom listened to a lot of different kinds of music, so, you know, we might be hearing Andre Segovia or, you know, mass gospel, like, you know, black gospel music, or, you know, like, I think that it's really important to open kids' minds, because before, like, 10 or 12, like, that's when they're the most open in their whole lives, you know? And then that stuff starts to close down, and then they enter the teen years. So I just put music on, and I don't let them dictate what's going on. Like, I definitely, if they want to hear stuff, I will play it. But, like, you know, when Frozen came out, like, we watched the movie once. I didn't get the soundtrack, so we never listened to it. You know what I mean? But, like, when I play something and then they really like it and they ask for it, I'll play as many times as they want. You know, like, I played Stevie Wonder for a while, you know, some of his top hits, and like Aretha Franklin, and so they got their favorites, so they started asking for their favorite ones of them. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, and then they still come home and they're like, yeah, I want to hear Taylor Swift because their friends are listening to Taylor Swift, and that's fine, you know. It's like I don't have any particular expectation of what they listen to, but what I find is the more that I expose them to, the more that they are open and they actually do request these things, and they will listen. Like, we've spent listening to a whole early music concert and they actually watch the whole thing, you know? And it's like, I think having, just expecting them to be open, they will be open, you know, and knowing that they can understand and take, you know, kinds of music that other people might say, oh, that's not for kids. Well, I think everything's for kids, you know? They can really get it. Cause I've seen it happen with mine. So, and it's exciting to see that. It's exciting to hear my 5-year-old go, I want to hear Superstition. You know, yeah, that makes me happy.
Come round by my side and I'll sing you a song. I'll sing it so softly, it'll do.